Hello, friends, and welcome to episode number 282 of Bad Flips and Maple Dips. I'm Patrick, he's Justin. And Justin, you can tell by my tempo to start, I just want to get right into it. There's a lot to discuss.
You sound very energized today.
There is a, is that sarcasm or legit?
Not legit, sarcasm.
There was a long pause.
I didn't think I'd have to pick up on it, but yeah, no, yeah, definitely sarcasm.
Listen, when the team plays well in Grapefruit League, it means everything to me, and when they play poorly, it means nothing. So, I don't know. I don't know what I'm supposed to get out of this. I just feel kind of bored already with this season because they didn't make any big moves. There's nothing to be excited about.
What do you mean? I thought they signed Shohei Ohtani. His private jet was on its way to Toronto.
Well,
did I miss something?
You did. Oh. And if you missed anything that we've done the last couple weeks here, you can go to @BFMDPodcast. Nice. That's our socials. Thanks for taking the time to listen to the episode, guys. We're going to talk about some little bit more free agent signing as the window is starting to close on those free agents. Some injury stuff, some stuff as far as some players who have yet to debut. And then the last thing we're going to talk about is we're closing the book on the off season now, where it appears as though the team is done making moves. So we're going to grade it. We're going to talk about who's in, who's out, and what does it all mean. So Justin, let's just get right into the news.
Hell yeah, dude. All right. So Jeff Passan yesterday, I guess 2 days ago now, sorry, March the 1st, tweeted out, third baseman Matt Chapman and the San Francisco Giants are in agreement on a 3-year, $54 million contract. Sources tell ESPN Chapman will receive opt-outs after each of the first two seasons. The first year of his deal will pay him $20 million, and then 18 in 2025, 16 in 2026, and those would both be dependent on opt-outs. Interesting, based on the fact that Matt Chapman allegedly rejected a $125 million contract from the Blue Jays last year at some point and has now settled for maybe 3 years and less than half of that. So it's a pretty big L for our boy Scott Boras, as well as for Matt Chapman. Another interesting stat that I saw on Twitter, I can't remember who tweeted it out, but the last San Francisco Giants player, Patrick, to hit 30 home runs in a season was Barry Bonds in 2004 when he hit 45. There have been some guys who have come close to 30, but it's crazy that you know, both Jorge Soler and Matt Chapman, as hitters who are trying to like kind of rebuild their value. Soler hit 36 homers for Miami last year in 137 games. Both those guys signed with the Giants as right-handed power hitters to try to hit 30 home runs. And
yeah,
I don't know if it's going to happen, my man. It's a weird place to go to rebuild your value as a hitter.
Yes, it is, because it's a pitcher park. By the way, Brandon Belt hit 29 home runs in 2021.
Yeah, he was one of the guys who came close. Yeah,
that's pretty damn close. That's the closest you can get without actually.
But
getting
still, 30. The fact that it's been 20 years now since a 30 homer season.
Yeah.
Pretty brutal, you know.
Yeah. Love this signing for the San Francisco Giants. Although I don't know what's going to happen to JD. Is it JD Davis they have at third already?
Yeah. Try not to care about them too much.
All right. I guess I don't know what they're doing. Anyway, it's great. Great for San Francisco, who I'm confused as far as what their goal is, but whatever. Good for Matt Chapman for getting some money. This is objectively a worse contract than what was offered to him by the Blue Jays last spring.
Yeah.
If he doesn't want to be in Toronto, he doesn't want to be in Toronto. And if he wanted to be in Toronto, why did he decline the offer? He bet on himself and he
lost.
He got worse. But anyway. Yeah. Good for him. Best of luck. We'll see him three times against the Giants this year.
In July, Jays go there.
Yeah, there's not much else to be said. This team made the decision they weren't interested in his services enough to pay him, so we move on. It would have been nice to have him back. I think he would have had given the Jays the stability they desperately need at third base. I think the Jays' plans at third base are going to blow up in their face this year. And, you know, grab your popcorn. I'm excited to watch it explode. It's going to be great.
Speaking of things not going well, Alek Manoah, as we've talked about, seems like every episode over the last 12 months, he's suffering from right shoulder soreness right now. He didn't rebound as well as he would have liked after his first spring training start, per John Schneider, and actually stopped throwing halfway through his bullpen session on Friday because his shoulder felt, quote, grumpy. MRI showed no damage structurally, but this will definitely slow up his ramp-up plan. A friend of the show, Keegan Matheson, has an article on MLB.com about this. In the same article, Patrick, there is some good news. Ricky Tiedemann was scheduled to pitch to live hitters this weekend, and about 5 minutes before we pushed the record button this morning, Keegan also posted a video on his Twitter at Keegan Matheson of Ricky Tiedemann throwing to Dalton Varsho. There's also a video on his Twitter of Yusei Kikuchi throwing to Biggio and Varsho, so it's good to see Cavan getting some ABs in as he rebounds from that tendonitis. And I guess the plan was, or is, if the session goes well today, that Ricky should be able to get back into games. Do you have anything to say about Alek Manoah before we move on, or is it kind of just is what it is at this point?
That's a good question.
I mean, if he's not able to get ramped up in time for opening day and or earn the fifth roster spot or the fifth rotation spot, guys like Mitch White and Bowden Francis would be next on the depth chart. And for what it's worth, they're both off to a reasonably solid start in the spring in the innings that they've pitched. So,
yeah,
the Jays do have some options.
I'll say this. I have more confidence in Bowden Francis being able to step in and be the fifth starter right now than I do Alek Manoah, period.
Yeah. And I mean, if Manoah's not healthy, the Jays can IL him, and that would save them from having to DFA Mitch White, because then Mitch White could be the long man in the bullpen if Francis is in the rotation, or either, really, in a sense, right?
Or so. Yariel Rodriguez, whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Bowden Francis has thrown in two games, I believe, so far, 4 1/3 innings, giving up a couple of runs, but what are you going to do? He's striking
out some
guys.
Everybody
is
giving up a couple of runs. Nobody's going out there and blowing everybody away because some teams, I noticed, are rolling out their like MLB roster to start while the Jays are rolling out all their fringe players.
The Jays have mixed in. Like, Guerrero's played in a few games. Bichette, too. The Jays are the Jays have a lot of fringe questions, you know?
Like the Yankees, for example, rolled out. Look at their top four.
Soto,
Aaron Judge, Alex Verdugo. Anthony Rizzo. Like, they're rolling out at all their heaviest hitters.
Yeah, and it depends, too, on the players. Some guys like to get a lot of action early on in the spring, whereas other guys like to do more backfield stuff. Like, we haven't seen Gausman yet because he likes to start on the backfield. It depends on, like, as guys become veterans in the league and go through multiple spring trainings, they learn how they like to approach the beginning of the spring. And for a lot of guys, it's getting into immediate game action, and for other guys, it's putting in work behind the scenes. So I'm not reading too much into it.
Yeah, but it's probably why the Jays 2-6 record being last place in the Grapefruit League means
nothing. Yeah, exactly.
Because they're not rolling out their MLB roster right now. Like, from what I've seen, 2/3 of the lineup is usually fringe guys.
Exactly. We just saw Bassett for the first time yesterday as well, did we not? If I remember correctly. So.
Yep.
He did take the loss. He gave up three. He gave up a home run.
Three hits, three earned runs. It's three hits, and
it's fine.
He threw three
innings, which is what you want, and that was 46 pitches, which is 15 per inning, which is where you want to be. So, obviously, it's all again the workload in, and the stats don't matter in spring, so he can give as many home runs as he want as long as opening day comes around and he's good to go. So, Arden's Welling, another injury, potential setback here. New acquisition from Cuba, Yariel Rodriguez, has yet to make his spring debut yet due to back spasms he experienced during a recent live BP. He was scheduled to throw off a mound yesterday. Haven't seen anywhere if he did or not. John Schneider may say something about that in his pre-game media availability. But haven't seen anything on Twitter. Couldn't find anything since the tweet from Arden there a couple days ago. So we'll have to wait for updates there. But I'm sure if the throwing yesterday went well, they'll get him into some live BP and then into game action soon. Another guy who was a potential option for the rotation is likely going to be either a reliever or a option for a starting pitcher in AAA. Yeah.
Yep. It's super early. There's nothing really worth even analyzing when it comes to who's ready and who's not, because the results of Grapefruit League don't matter on a team level. Individually, it gives the guy something to work on. If Orelvis was having a hotter spring, then I'd be like, oh, well, maybe he's going to be an option. You know what I mean? At third base. But I honestly don't know what this team is. Their expectations when it comes to their super utility players is just, I just don't understand it. I don't, the science doesn't check out. It doesn't make sense to me.
Right,
anyway.
Right. No, I'm with you.
Whatever.
Really, there's not a whole bunch to talk about today. So what we wanted to go through was asking if the Jays are done making any moves with the offseason now over. So players that came in, Patrick, and you did the research on this one, you put Yariel Rodriguez, who we just talked about, Justin Turner, Isaiah Kiner-Falefa. They brought back Kevin Kiermaier and have been utilizing Daniel Vogelbach quite a bit, and some people think he will be a bench bat for them. Going out, Matt Chapman, Whit Merrifield, who signed in Philly, Hyunjin Ryu, who went back to Korea, Brandon Belt, who has yet to sign yet, Adam Simber, who I believe got maybe a minor league deal with the Angels, if I'm remembering correctly, Jordan Hicks also went to San Francisco, and he wants to be a starter there, and Patrick also wrote a clever clip here, our belief in the team is also something that went out this offseason. Are the Jays done, Patrick?
Yep.
Okay, what would you give the grade for the offseason then?
This is tough because the only thing I can think to do is compare similar positions to who's out and who's in order to figure out what the net positives or negatives are. So we'll start off by looking at Yariel Rodriguez coming in versus Hyunjin Ryu, Adam Simber, and Jordan Hicks going out. So let's start with Yariel Rodriguez. He's pretty much an unknown, like an X factor at this point. We don't really know what to expect from him. Even if he gives like a slight value, like a slight positive value, that's still leagues better than what we got from Adam Simber, who obviously had the injury last year, but then just wasn't.
He never fought his way back onto the MLB roster after that.
Jordan Hicks was fantastic for the Jays last year. They were never going to be able to afford him, and obviously he landed in San Francisco. So what is it with the Giants picking up our
sloppy seconds?
I didn't want to use that phrase. I don't like that. But Chapman, Stripling, Hicks. It's a concerning trend, it seems like.
I'm not concerned. If they were better players, I'd be concerned. But
yeah, that's true. So, Hicks. Nyx was a 1.1 F4. Simber was negative 0.6. And, of course, the Hwangjin Ryu of it all. This is a guy absolutely beloved in Toronto. Came back. He didn't have to. Looked pretty good. He definitely beat the projections. He had a 4.91 FIP in 52 innings last year for the Jays. But he only had a 3.46 ERA, which is great. 0.4 F4. So, overall, you're looking at a 0.9 F4 worth of player out. So can Yariel Rodriguez be better than 0.9 F4 while pitching between 60 and 80 innings?
Yeah, it depends what role he's in, right? If he's a starter, yeah, it's a lot easier to earn that F4. As a reliever, you have to be like out freaking standing for the entire season to earn one F4. Just like Tim Meza.
Let's call it a wash. Yeah. I know it's 3-1, but it's pretty close to being.
You also have a little bit of addition by subtraction in this sense, where you're able to now potentially utilize lower cost options in Francis and Mitch White in those kind of spots, you know? They're paying Yael Rodriguez less per year than they were for Hyunjin Ryu on his own, you know?
So. Yeah, but I don't care about, unless that money is used.
It got used for Isaiah Kiner Falefa, Patrick. Of course it got used.
Yeah, okay, so here's the next thing. It's Justin Turner and Isaiah Kiner Falefa versus Matt Chapman and Whit Merrifield. I think it's no contest. There's not really a way to compare Justin Turner, who's pretty much just going to be a DH. The closest you get maybe Brandon Belt and Justin Turner, and if Turner can do what Belt did last year, then yeah, that's great.
Mm-hmm.
But looking at the pieces, we're not going to include Kevin Kiermaier in the analysis because, well, he was there last year, so we'd be comparing Kevin Kiermaier to Kevin Kiermaier, and it doesn't make sense. So
yeah,
him being back is a positive, but there is no counterpoint to go out. So it's Justin Turner and Isaiah Kiner Falefa compared to Matt Chapman, Whit Merrifield, and Brandon Belt. Pretty obvious downgrade. Not because Justin Turner and IKF are bad players. It's just that Chapman, Merrifield, and Belt collectively represent like 5 or 6 F4 themselves. IKF and Turner represent maybe 2.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to be leaning a lot on the other players that are left on the roster to, you know, make up for that loss in value that the team has. And it's not just F4 versus F4 too, right?
Yeah.
Whit Merrifield out, you lose a really good super utility player who kind of faded by the end of the season. And, yeah, I don't know if he ever really wanted to be there, but whatever.
Doesn't matter at this point.
It doesn't matter at this point. They're hoping Kevin Biggio can be the Whit Merrifield this year.
I think they're
kind of
hoping for Kiner Falefa to be that as well.
IKF is also supposed to be that, but the problem that I see happening is the bat value, the hitting value is not there at all. IKF was a negative value of offensive player and defensive player last year, and finished the year with a 740 OPS but a 0.2 F4.
Right.
No power. He can swipe bases, which is great. He can run, I guess. If we get the IKF of 2022, I'm happy. But if we get the one from last year, that's a big problem. That's a drop-off in average, run scored, RBI, and stolen bases. It's just not good. So I think the Jays look at it as a very slight reclamation project, and also hoping for like a bounce back.
Mm-hmm.
But again, even assuming peak IKF, it's the guys going out are still leagues better. And then I guess Daniel Vogelbach versus Brandon Belt, maybe that's a more appropriate comparison. Okay, we can make a million and one jokes about Daniel Vogelbach, but let's actually talk about him. Let's actually get right into the guts, okay? So this guy did play with the Jays for a very short period of time, and I think his batting average was zero during that time. But let's talk about last year's Daniel Vogelbach. Let's be nice, okay? Last year, he had 104 games played for the Mets. He hit 13 home runs and 33 runs scored, 48 RBIs. Strike rate of 25.4%. Walk rate of 13.2% rate. So there's something there, right? He's got a bit of plate vision. The problem is that he only hits 233.
Well, and he hits zero against lefties. You don't put him in against lefties at all. He had 16 plate appearances last year. Only reached base a couple times. So
yeah.
He hit 246 against righties with 13 dingers in 300 plate appearances. So, I mean, that's a 26 homer pace over 600 at-bats. Not that he's going to get that, but just to quantify it to like a full season's worth of plate appearances, he's still a 25 homer player, but only plays against righties. So he's only like half of that, right?
So the question 15. Is, can he play defense? The answer is just straight up no.
No, it's not. Yeah, he can't.
It's not why he's there. He's going to, if he makes this team, he will be a bench bat, and he will be a DH.
Yep.
They already need DH dates for Vladdy, and probably for Bo, and probably, almost certainly for Springer. And then you've got Justin Turner, who's, I can't see him playing third.
See, the good thing about having a Vogelbach and a Turner is that if one is DHing and the other one's on the bench, you can always swap them out later in the game at that DH position. You know?
Yeah, and it's not like lefties are proliferating starting rotations everywhere. Like, lefties are still...
Yeah, they're about the same amount as they always have been. Yeah, it's just percentage of the population. Yeah.
So... I think the big thing is, the big question for Vogelbach is it better for him to just be in Buffalo and just get as many PAs as possible to stay as
the thing, Patrick, ready as possible? Is there's likely a clause in his contract where if he's not added to the active roster, the 40-man roster, he can opt out of it and somebody else will sign him because of his utility against righties. So this signing was always a, you've got to come in and produce against right-handed pitching in the spring. He already hit a dinger off Gerrit Cole, which, by the way, he kind of pimped it, which I'm not a huge fan of in spring training.
But I don't care.
I don't. There's a whole, whatever makes Yankee fans angry at the end of the day makes me happy. And whatever makes Gerrit Cole whine like a little bitch like he is, that makes me happy too. So good on you, Daniel. I don't give a fuck.
Yeah, it's whatever. I know. I know he was upset or whatever, but
whatever. It is what it is. It's spring training. Pitch better if you don't want to have home runs hit off you, I guess. It's always what we say. So
anyway, so Vogelbach isn't really comparable to Brandon Belt in any sort of, as far as roles go. So if we, let's just take another step back here and look at the in versus out. I think the out is obviously significantly more powerful than the in. There is a lot of unknown with Yarrow Rodriguez and which version of IKF we're getting. Retaining Kevin Kiermaier is a positive, but the story of the 2024 Toronto Blue Jays is going to be, can their homegrown talent, the Schneiders, the Horowitz, the Biggios, the Bichettes, the Guerreros, the Kirks, can they overperform enough to make up for the fact that key pieces of this team are now gone?
Yeah.
And can the pitching staff remain as healthy as they were last year? Because if not, this team is not going to win the amount of games it needs to make the playoffs, which if we are going by Fangraphs, the projected full season is that the Jays will win 84 games, which would put them fourth in their division. So right off the bat, it's WC3 or nothing.
Yeah.
However, the Mariners are fixing to be second in their projections in their division, which would put the Jays out of the playoffs. So Fangraphs has the Jays winning 84 games, winning 84 and losing 78. Yankees winning the division going 89 and 73. I'll take the under. The Rays going 86 and 76 and the Orioles going 85 and 77. With the Mariners going 85 and 77 as well, but the Astros winning the division with 91 games. So the Jays missed the playoffs according to Fangraphs projections, but 84 wins, Justin, feels appropriate for a team whose pitching staff overperformed last year and whose hitting underperformed, and their lineup is objectively worse than it was last year.
Yeah.
The Jays are leaning so hard on comeback performances by all of their hitters and a consistent level of performance that the Jays captured last year that I think is not repeatable. So
right.
For fans of this team expecting them to contend for a division title, I would ask that you subvert your expectations. The goal of this team is going to be as competitive as they can, so that way in the last 40 games of the season, they can get hot enough to get into the playoffs. That's it. The window is starting to close, and I don't know that you can even blame Atkins and Shapiro on the offseason. If nobody was interested in signing in Toronto, what are you supposed to do?
Well, and I mean, and if what they wanted was more than they're worth, if you sign guys to bad contracts, you get roasted anyway.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they've kind of had to just take what they could get. And I mean, yeah, they slightly overpaid for IKF. Probably more than slightly, but at the time, that was close to the beginning of the off season. Nobody knew that these guys like Blake Snell would still be without a contract, you know? Like, nobody predicted that that was going to happen. So you sign guys for what the market dictates at the time, and that's what they had to do, unfortunately. And it obviously, if they would have waited longer to sign IKF, maybe somebody else would have paid that amount, but you could have held out for you could have brought back Matt Chapman easily instead of having IKF there on too much money. But it
that's
is what
probably
it is.
The difference between 84 wins and 87, and 87 would get you very safely into the wild card. I will say this though, that I'm talking about projections and I'm talking about you know, how the Jays are projected to win 84 games. The gap between the Jays and the Yankees, according to Fangraphs, is only 5 wins, which is very small.
The AL East is going to be a dogfight this year. There
and also
three teams in the Yankees, Baltimore, and Tampa that are projected to be better than the Blue Jays.
Yeah,
but even Boston's not that far behind.
Another thing too is that in the history of Fangraphs, I've never seen a team receive more favorable predictions than the New York Yankees. Every year, they're 5 or 6 wins above, like, projected above what they got. Like, last year, they're 82 and 80 was their final record for the year. And they think that they're going to win 7 more games and win the division. It's very strange. I don't quite understand why Fangraphs is always so bullish.
I mean, they did add Juan Soto.
That's true, but they do stupid shit too, where they're like, The first year that Ryu was coming to Toronto, they thought his ERA was going to double.
Yeah.
Immediately, and it didn't. And it was like, okay. Anyway, Fangraphs, take it with a grain of salt. Don't base your whole life's value on Fangraphs. What we can take away from it is that it's going to be very close, which is why that, you know, the team, expect this team to be close going into mid-August, early September, and then have to rip it up in order to get into the playoffs again. And if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. Then they miss the playoffs and we're all miserable. But if I'm right, then it'll be an exciting September again. But, oh boy, the offseason was quite a disappointment. I don't know how else you could spin it.
Yeah, looking at these projected standings as well, too, I mean, you'd have the Astros winning the West, the Mariners being second there.
Yeah.
And then there's three AL East teams. So, yeah, that already, even though the Jays have, like, the eighth or ninth best projected record in baseball, they would finish out of the playoffs because of that. There would be three other AL teams not winning divisions ahead of them. The Twins are projected to have 84 wins as well, and that would win the Central. So the sooner MLB abolishes divisions and just does the best seven teams from each league make the playoffs, or the best six teams from each league make the playoffs, the better off it'll be. Because the Blue Jays are projected to have the sixth best AL record, but there are five teams ahead of them. Which is crazy. So, yeah. Anyway.
It is what it is.
The offseason was a D, long story short.
Being a D, giving it a D is probably...
I think it's fair.
Probably fair. It's very... I think it's a little slightly under... I think, like, the whatever the lowest you can get before giving them a D plus, so like a C minus minus, it's disappointing. Let's see what happens those first 13 games. I look at the first 13 games the Jays have. They play the Rays, they play the Yankees, they play the Mariners, they play the Astros. Let's see where the team is after those first 13 games, and that'll probably tell the story, I think. Because those are tough games. Four against the Rays right off the bat. And it's not like the Rays got better. They're also, remember, the Rays also lost their shortstop. Probably forever. Right?
Was he a shortstop? Yeah, I don't think he's coming back.
But anyway.
I don't think he's coming back, buddy. Yeah, he's...
Anyway, we don't have to talk about that, and I'm not interested in talking about that. What really matters to me is the Toronto Blue Jays. We're a Toronto Blue Jays podcast. Yeah, anyway. I don't know. I don't think the Jays are the fourth best team in this division. I think all five of them could get hot at a different time and potentially walk away with a division title.
Except for Boston.
I don't even think, I think the Boston ceiling is probably higher than Toronto's floor.
I don't know if I agree with that.
Well, if they sign Jordan Montgomery,
their rotation is headlined by Lucas Giolito, Patrick.
Yeah, I know, but there's still Blake Snell and Jordan Montgomery.
Yeah,
right
they're
it's
not
very possible. They
I don't
sign
think
both
they're
going to
sign them.
But it's possible.
It's possible, but I mean, yeah, I mean, all of their starters last year, the numbers over a full season weren't good. I think they still have a lot of hope that Bray and Bayo and Cutter Crawford and Tanner Houck can be really good internal homegrown options for them, and they might. Like Bayo started to look a lot better towards the end of last season, and they've still got Nick Pivetta there who can be really, really good and then be really, really bad too. But yeah, I think they've kind of the Red Sox are going to hope to use a term the kids use. They're going to hope to mid their way through the season and just never peak too much or fall too low. Obviously, having guys like Devers and maybe a rebound year from Trevor's Story is huge. They brought Tyler O'Neill in. So they do have some guys with pop, obviously. But I worry more so about a lot of the guys that they've brought in have a lot of injury issues.
Yeah.
So that leaves me concerned just for their health, essentially, is going to be a real, I think, issue for them this season. And it'll be the difference between them making any sort of noise in the AL wildcard race versus them finishing like with 70 wins potentially, you know? They could go 70 and 92. Like they could.
Do you think going by the, let's go by what we know, so Fangraph projections plus our own personal
opinions,
projections, yeah, whatever you want to say, do the Toronto Blue Jays make the playoffs? Yes or no? Yes or no?
Yes. I think yes still. I think obviously it's a wild card position. The Jays offensively, unless they get bounce back years from everyone who had down year last year, Vladdy, Springer, Kirk, Varsho, they need all of those guys to be their best seasons essentially. And I don't think that happens to win a division title, but I think they have enough to win a wild card spot. But again, even if they do make the playoffs, I think it'll be the exact same outcome as it has been the last three times they've been in there where they don't win a game. Like, it's just they're hoping to once again pitch their way to a World Series with their starting rotation, and they'll be able to pitch their way to the playoffs with this rotation, but you still have to score runs to win games, and the Blue Jays didn't score enough runs in a two-game series, or in a three-game series that only went two games against the Twins last year, to even warrant any hope that they can do better with this downgraded offense. So,
well, folks, you heard it here first. Justin believes that the Jays will make the playoffs, so that's very interesting.
Yeah, the age-old argument still goes. Like, would you rather make the playoffs and not win a game, or just miss the playoffs and get a better draft pick? I'm always miss the playoffs and get a better draft pick in that scenario.
Yeah, but I don't even think the draft matters in MLB as much.
Not as much, unless you're like drafting Jackson Holliday, like the Orioles did 2 years ago, and he's gonna probably make their opening day roster now.
I'm gonna be contrarian today.
What else is new?
And I'm gonna say no. The team, as is right this minute, will not make the playoffs.
Wow, such a hater. Wow.
I'm not a hater. It's just based on what I'm seeing in front of me.
I know.
Looking at everything that we have in front of us right now, the team is banking way too much on players having epic comeback years. Yeah. I just don't think that it's like seven guys who have to do it. And it's too many. And if anybody gets injured who's expected to have like an epic comeback, it's over. So I don't know, man. I just don't. Look, I love the pitching staff. I think this is the best pitching staff the Jays have ever constructed. But that's how little I think of the lineup. It's not.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I don't have a good feeling. Don Mattingly, I hope, has a like wizard wand or whatever and can make these guys.
Well, he grew a beard. We all know that growing a beard adds 10 to every stat. So
I don't know, man. I'm gonna stick with no, because it's bad radio for both of us to be like, oh yeah, I agree with everything you say. I'll say no. I'm gonna say 84 wins, but we still have a month to go before games are played, or a little bit less than a month. So maybe something will change. Maybe they'll make a trade. Probably not. And it would be at the cost of the future. And I think at this point, if you're the Jays, you stop making trades and trading away your future talent, and you retain them. So that way, when you can't afford to keep Vladdy and can't afford to keep Bo, then you have, you know, players, young developing players stepping into roles. God, that's depressing.
It's not ideal.
It's not ideal to miss the playoffs. The thing is, the Jays have not won a playoff game since 2016. And they're fixing to do it again this year. So the question is, what are we doing? What is the purpose of all of this?
I don't know, man. What is the purpose of life? What's the goal of it all?
To be happy.
Damn. Well, we're in the wrong spot then.
we're supporting the wrong team. That's okay though. You know what?
There are 29 other teams that don't have happy outcomes every year too in baseball. So.
Yeah, exactly. Some teams have never won a World Series. Some teams have won one. Some teams
had to wait until last year to get their very first one. So.
I know, but you can't take it away from them.
You can't. It happened.
Yep. 100%. But,
I mean, that's really all we've got for today. There hasn't been too much happening in Blue Jay land other than a few hopefully minor injuries. But it's good to see Ricky Tiedemann back on a mound this morning on Keegan's Twitter there.
Richard
Tiedemann, yeah. So we'll see what happens, but I mean, you still have a lot of guys trying to make some noise this spring. I mean, Ernie Clement trying to make the team, Spencer Horwitz, Addison Barger, like a lot of guys who are still internal candidates that could get really hot this spring and maybe push guys like Vogelbach, just not even put him into consideration to be added. It could push guys like Espinal off if he doesn't have a good spring. Biggio's got to get into game action or risk missing the start of the season on the IL. I mean, there's still a lot of things that are being determined in terms of the bench depth of this team and even the latter bullpen spots based on some injury and performance. So there's still things that need to be determined, but overall this spring is less about guys making the roster and more about, my God, does this team have the roster to do anything? So we'll see how it goes in the next couple of weeks. We're like under four weeks away from opening day, so it's coming.
Prepare for the worst, hope for the best.
Hope for the best. Yeah, shoot for the moon. Even if you miss, you'll land among the stars. That's the old quote that was always on every classroom wall, right?
I do not like that one.
Because if you land among the stars, you're still going to die anyway, so.
That's true. I mean, we're all worm food. We're all worm food in training.
Yeah. And life's longest con. We're all just going to die anyway. But anyway, that's to end on a happy note. If you like what we do, give us a follow on Twitter at BFMD Podcast. Website's the same, BFMDpodcast.com. We'll be back again in hopefully a few days with some maybe more positive news on the Blue Jay front. But until then, for Patrick out in Halifax, I am Justin here in Saskatoon, and we will see you next time.